This is Jim Inkster coming today on Talk Louisiana. We'll review Super Bowl 52. The Philadelphia Eagles have won their first championship since the Super Bowl began in 1967. We'll talk about that and the commercials. It cost $5 million for a 30-second spot, and with us to analyze the commercials is Jensen Moore, professor of journalism at the University of Oklahoma, formerly with the Manship School of Mass Communication. Also, lawyer Mike Wolf and attorney Ben Baggert. Baggert, a former state senator, they'll discuss the controversial memo released by the House Intelligence Committee last week and whether it has pertinence as far as the investigation against the President of the United States. We'll talk about it with Mike Wolf and Ben Baggert. Now the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana on 89.3 WRKF. Your number is 877-217-5757. Locally, 297-5633. And you can send us an email to talk@talklouisiana.org. We're visiting with University of Oklahoma journalism professor Jensen Moore. She spent several years at the Manship School, and we started analyzing the commercials from the Super Bowls with her starting in the year of 2012. So I think this is 7 years we've done this. And if you watched the game last night, as many Americans did, of course, a 30-second spot cost $5 million. It was quite a game. The New England Patriots were favored but lost 41-33 to the Philadelphia Eagles, who won their first championship. Nick Foles, who spent the year most of it as the backup quarterback for the Eagles until Carson Wentz was injured, he is the most valuable player. 378 yards passing, even caught a touchdown pass. And in defeat, Tom Brady, considered by many as the greatest of all time, he threw for 505 yards. The Patriots didn't punt. They moved the ball up and down the field but lost 41-33. And Tom Brady, with 505 yards passing, was only 49 yards short of the all-time record for an NFL game set by Norman Van Brocklin in the year of 1951. Jensen Moore, the Super Bowl began in 1967, and it has taken a life of its own. It's the biggest sporting spectacle in the world, and now many are more enthused or as much enthused about the commercials that run as the game itself. Good morning.
Good morning. How are you doing today, Jim?
Doing well. What's your take on what you saw last night? Were the commercials good for the most part?
Well, I felt that the commercials matched the game. We had a great game to watch, and the commercials were good as well. I mean, after last year's politically driven ads, we got to see a lot more humor this year. Some of it paid off, some of it didn't, but we see that a lot with humor because not everybody thinks the same things are funny.
What were your favorites?
My number one was Odell Beckham and Eli Manning, the Dirty Dancing, the NFL ad. After their, you know, their 3-13 record, the fact that they are still planning their touchdown dances for next year is a little heartwarming, and of course, was just hilarious.
Well, you two guys from Newman High in New Orleans, and the other giant in that commercial was Landon Collins, who's from Louisiana as well. And you mentioned a team that went 3-13, and yet there they are, Eli Manning and Odell Beckham. And for those who missed it, it's really a visual experience, but I think you'll get the idea. Allie, let's give a brief listen.
You gonna work on that thing?
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's get it.
Now all right, so they do their version of Dirty Dancing. And Odell Beckham looked pretty good, Jensen, for a guy who just broke his leg a few months ago.
Yes, he did. He was quite agile, and that lift at the end was superb.
Well, what others did you like?
I really liked the Tide ads. Stranger Things actor David Harbour popped into several different ads that you didn't really know what they were advertising, and all of a sudden he was there saying, this is also a Tide ad. He spoofed the Mr. Clean ads, he spoofed the Old Spice ads, and it got you really thinking every time you saw another ad pop up, is this going to be a Tide ad also?
Well, the online blowback was swift for Ram trucks on Sunday. The car maker used a sermon given by the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King as a voiceover for a Super Bowl ad. Here's how this one sounded.
If you want to be important, wonderful. If you want to be recognized, wonderful. If you want to be great, wonderful. But recognize that he who is greatest among you shall be your servant. That's a new definition of greatness. By giving that definition of greatness, it means that everybody can be great. You don't have to know about Plato and Aristotle to serve. You don't have to know the theory of relativity to serve. You don't have to know the second theory of thermodynamics in physics to serve.
At the end, the phrase "built to serve" is shown on the screen along with the Ram logo. And Jensen, this one may not have been what Ram desired as far as the reaction.
No, well, so that particular speech from King Jr. was about service. But a lot of his other speeches were about anti-capitalism. So the fact that it's being used in a capitalistic way to sell a truck really did not hit the mark with the majority of the audience. And if you look on Twitter and Facebook today, there are just a lot of people who are not happy about the use of his words to sell Ram trucks.
In the New York Times account of this, here's a quote saying, MLK wanted equal rights and for me to buy a Dodge Ram, one Twitter user wrote. Another wrote, black people can't kneel and play football, but MLK should be used to sell trucks during the Super Bowl. Unbelievable. So this is not the kind of response you would want to get after spending $5 million for the commercial itself and probably a few million more for production. This is an expensive endeavor, and this one apparently misfired. And Ram, Jensen, as you know, has in the past gotten great praise for its commercials during the Super Bowl.
Yeah, they've had some really innovative kind of spot-on ads in the past, and so the fact this one was such a big miss is surprising.
The King Center said on Twitter that neither the organization nor the Reverend Bernice King, one of Dr. King's daughters, is responsible for approving his words or imagery for use in merchandise, entertainment, or advertisement. It said that included the Super Bowl. Ram approached Dr. King's estate about using his voice in the commercial, said Eric Tidwell, the managing director of intellectual properties, the licensor of the estate, and once the final creative was presented for approval, it was reviewed to ensure it met our standard integrity clearances. But this is, I suspect, going to have a few days of news value. Probably we'll be talking about this for a few days to come.
Yes, and like you said, the estate approved it, but the family itself did not approve it. And so the family is being very verbal and distancing themselves from the ad. And so it is going to have a couple more days run while we get to the root of it.
And you said this year, on the whole, was not as political, but this one may end up being the one that's talked about the most.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about how we process humor and how we think of humor, what's funny to me might not be funny to you. And so the fact that most of these ads were built around humor left a lot of things kind of up in the air. We saw, if you look at the different rankings online today, you'll see, USA Today ranks Amazon as the best ad. But if you look at other sites, the Alexa Lost Her Voice, that's what I'm talking about with Amazon. A lot of people thought that one was tone deaf and didn't understand some of the people being used in that particular ad. Some other ones that were kind of tone deaf, the Diet Coke ad where the girl was just kind of dancing around freestyling for 30 seconds, getting a lot of people saying the M&Ms with Danny DeVito was not funny at all, Pringles with Bill Hader, stuff like that, Bud Light with still continuing the Dilly Dilly. A lot of people are just like, why would you pay $5 million for that? So a lot of things just really didn't hit their target.
The King commercial, according to Tim Calkins, a marketing professor at Northwestern in Chicago, says there's so much emotion right now around race in this country that this was a high-risk move, and clearly it's not going over very well. Another a commercial pointed out by our producer, Ali Baltazar, she says Wendy's threw some serious shade at McDonald's. What happened here?
Yes, so Wendy's, if you follow their Twitter account, Wendy's goes after a lot of what we consider the fast food giants. They go after Taco Bell, they go after McDonald's, they go after Burger King. This time they brought it to television, and they attacked McDonald's with a fury, comparing their frozen beef patties to the iceberg that struck the Titanic, and it was just hilarious. And definitely kept up the voice of what Wendy's has been doing on social media. And so that one was a big win, I feel, for Wendy's and for all of the Super Bowl ads that were that came out yesterday.
Well, there was an e-meter determining how viewers judge these commercials. We'll talk about that with Jensen Moore, professor at the University of Oklahoma. We're back after this pause on 89.3 WRKF. And Ali says we've got a few more seconds before we go to the break. But why don't we preview this right now? This e-meter, what does it show as far as viewer preferences?
So the e-meter is very much like kind of what we think of Nielsen. It's a select group of people who evaluate the ads. So that group may not be, you know, representative of you or I. It's just that group of people and what they think. And so while you're watching the game and you think something is a hit, somebody else with their e-meter could think it's a miss. And so you have to look at kind of various sources when you're looking at ranking the ads. And some people just go through and rank the ads themselves.
877-217-5757 or 297-5633. We'll go to the phone lines with Professor Moore when we return after this pause on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. We'll be talking about the memo that gained a lot of attention last week on Capitol Hill with attorneys Ben Bagger and Michael Wolff. But we're pleased to spend another segment with Dr. Jensen Moore, University of Oklahoma public relations professor, formerly at Louisiana State University. Dr. Moore has a background in professional sports as well. 877-217-5757 is your number. Jim and Walker. Hi, Jim. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Hello, gentlemen. I was watching the Super Bowl yesterday, and jaw just hit the floor when that Ram truck ad ran, and I could not believe that Dodge had decided to run an MLK speech ad to sell white redneck trucks for the NFL with all the Colin Kaepernick controversy. It was the most amazingly tone-deaf or directly targeted ad that I've ever seen. I mean, the only thing it was missing was that the trucks were going to be available in hood white, black, and MAGA red.
All right. Jim found it offensive. I think many others did as well. Dr. Moore, it's amazing how a big company can make a misfire like this, and I'm sure they had meetings after meeting after meeting talking about the pros and cons and decided to go with it.
Yeah, we've seen some very tone-deaf ads, though, in the past year. If you remember the Pepsi ad with Kendall Jenner stopping the riots by handing, you know, the police officer, a Pepsi. Some of these ads just kind of get made in a vacuum. The creative people think it's a great idea. Management supports it. And it doesn't really get tested well. So this is where it falls down on the message testing, whether you're going to do focus groups or whether you're going to do some, you know, some split surveys with people. But message testing is key before you release something like this. And in this case, I think it just wasn't tested with the right audiences. Otherwise, they would have known that this was going to be something that was going to cause a huge backlash.
Another listener notes that the old axiom is that no publicity is bad publicity, and if the goal was to get attention, Ram certainly accomplished this.
Well, but there's also a difference between attention and sales. Now, is this going to affect their bottom line? And so if Graham just wanted attention, they got it. But I have a feeling that they really wanted sales, and I think that this is definitely going to push back on that, mm-hmm. that number for them.
Another listener notes that the Mannings certainly have staying power. We saw Peyton. It's been a few years since he's played. He's back, and his brother, as you noted, on a 3-13 team. What is it about the magic of the Mannings?
I think that they just represent that idea of a wholesome football player. You know, here's this guy who leads a team, but he only went 3-13. But we still have faith in him. We still think they're going to come back. And, you know, with players on the team like Odell Beckham Jr., how can we not, you know, look at that team as somebody who's going to recover next year?
Mm-hmm. You, as I noted, you have a background in professional sports. It was quite a game, and amazingly, the Patriots, with arguably the greatest quarterback in the history of the game, did not punt. Tom Brady threw for 505 yards. He was not intercepted. He did fumble in a crucial time, but he had an amazing game, and they still lost.
Yeah, this game, to me, kind of took me back to Kurt Warner in the St. Louis Rams. You know, here's this guy who used to be working for the Iowa Barnstormers and comes up and wins the Super Bowl, right? Kind of the same with Nick Foles yesterday. Here's somebody who was backup quarterback winning the Super Bowl. And so it reminded me of that whole Kurt Warner situation of, you know, the underdog really coming through and stepping up. And it was amazing to watch.
Mm-hmm. But Foles will probably go to camp as the number two quarterback for the Eagles.
Yeah, and isn't that strange? You win a Super Bowl, you're MVP, and now you're still going to be the backup mm-hmm. quarterback.
The coach of the Eagles, Doug Peterson, former quarterback at ULM, spent 14 years as a backup in the league. And then for 4 years, as in just a decade ago, he was the head coach at Calvary Baptist Academy in Shreveport. What a remarkable rise from obscurity to prominence for him.
Mm-hmm.
He's now king of the world as a coach of a Super Bowl champion. Philadelphia is a great sports town, and the Phillies, in their long history, have only won two titles, 1980-2008. It's been a long time since the 76ers won one, and now the Eagles have won their first Super Bowl championship. So I imagine Philadelphia is bedlam right now.
Oh, definitely. The police scanner last night, everybody was following along with what was happening on it. And so if you look on Twitter, there's this whole group of people who are just reposting what was coming across the Philadelphia police scanner, and it's a hilarious thread to follow.
Mm-hmm. And another listener notes that two prominent former LSU stars are big in Philadelphia. The ace pitcher for the Phillies is Aaron Nola, and mm-hmm. Ben Simmons is having quite a rookie year with the 76ers.
Yes, he is.
Mm-hmm. And Roman Starnes, he has a list of 14 LSU players who now have championships in the NCAA with LSU and in the Super Bowl. Joseph Addai, Eric Alexander, Michael Clayton, Marlon Favorite, Matt Flynn, Randall Gay, Devre Henderson, Marquise Hill, Quinn Johnson, Brandon LaFell, Stephen Ridley, Justin Vincent, Corey Webster, and Donnie Jones, who last night was the guy who snapped the last field goal for Philadelphia. And the Eagles defied the odds, apparently battled a flu epidemic as well. And some of the performers during the game, Professor Moore, they also were battling the flu.
Yes, Pink, before she went on to sing the national anthem, had been battling the flu, had to take a throat lozenge out before she started singing. Everybody, this flu epidemic is really hitting us hard, and it hit yesterday, and so there were a lot of players that were playing through it, and it was impressive to see them dig deep and pull out some of their best performances despite the flu.
You thought the halftime show was good?
The halftime show, I thought, was another fail. So we've got Justin Timberlake, who by himself would have been great, but then he pulled Prince into it. And if you had been following anything with Justin Timberlake and Prince, Justin Timberlake had not spoken well of Prince in the past, and there was actually some animosity there between the two of them. The song Sexy Back was actually a point of contention between the two. So the fact that Justin pulled Prince's memory into his performance was one point of contention. The other is Prince had said before his death that he did not agree with using likenesses, projections, holograms of people who had passed mm-hmm. in current performances. And so the fact that they kind of defied his wishes and used his image anyway is a major sticking point for a lot of Prince fans.
Well, it is interesting that the two biggest areas of offending people were with dead icons, Martin Luther King Jr. and mm-hmm. Prince.
Yeah, and certainly it's going to revolve around race, because people are going to say, you know, you're using our black mentors, the people that we have put up on pedestals and we look up to, and you're using them to sell products, or you're using them to promote your Pepsi halftime. And so a lot of people are going to be upset by that.
Well, we thank you for reviewing Super Bowl 52, and I'm sure next year, despite some of the controversy, the spots will probably be selling for $6 million for 30 seconds. That's a lot of money for a 30-second ad.
Yes, it is.
And to get a heap of criticism on top of it, I suspect some heads are rolling today at Chrysler.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Dr. Moore. It's a pleasure. And let's talk again soon.
Definitely. Thank you very much, Jim.
My pleasure. And we'll be back to talk about that controversial memo. Was it epic in its importance as far as the Mueller investigation, or is this a nothing story? We have two lawyers who have different points of view, Ben Bagger, Mike Wolf. Your number 877-217-5757, back after this news break on WRKM. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us for Talk Louisiana. Ali Baltazar is producing, and your number is 877-217-5757, locally 297-5633. You can email us, talk@talklouisiana.org. The story in the New York Times today, front page, is Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee backed away from President Trump's claim that a newly released memo vindicates him in the Russia investigation. Democrats are pressing for the release of their own classified rebuttal. A vote is expected today. The memo that the panel's Republicans released on Friday claims that federal law enforcement officials abused their power to spy on former Trump campaign official Carter Page. In the days since its release, members of the two parties have clashed sharply over its import. Some Republicans say it shows evidence of bias in the Russia inquiry from the start, and Democrats have denounced it as a misleading tactic to undermine the investigation and protect Mr. Trump. With us to talk about it are two attorneys, Mike Wolf. He was more or less the founder of the Libertarian Party in Louisiana, longtime lawyer in Louisiana, now in New York State, at least for a while. And Ben Baggert, the former state senator, former state representative, and he was the endorsed Republican candidate for the U.S. Senate race of 1990, won by Bennett Johnston. I remember David Duke was in that race as well. But Ben Baggert, named one of the top lawyers in New Orleans several years running by New Orleans Magazine. And let's begin with you, Senator Baggert. What are your thoughts about this memo that was released last Thursday by the Republicans, or Friday? What's your take on whether it is a big thing or a not-so-big one?
I think it's a big thing, and I think we have to follow it to its conclusion. We have to see what the minority of the Senate Intelligence Committee comes up with, but I believe I'm going to be sharing a lot of the views of the libertarian guests that you have. I firmly believe that the privacy of American citizens is very important. It's protected by the Fourth Amendment. A large part of my practice, especially recently, has been dedicated to protecting that privacy, and with some very satisfying, successful results. It seems to me that the whole idea of getting a search warrant onto Christopher Steele was that he was connected with the Trump campaign, and that he would be in essence the nose under the camel's tent. This young naval Academy graduate, Trump volunteer, who had an office at Trump Tower and maybe tried to communicate with Trump personnel. Getting a warrant on him. See, we haven't seen the warrant, nor have we seen the application for the warrant. But getting a warrant on him would have resulted in getting all of his PIN numbers, and these are registries of numbers from telephones that he called and also telephone calls that he received.
All right, let's get a response from Michael Wolff before we go to the phone lines. And again, your number, 877-217-5757 for attorneys Ben Baggard and Mike Wolff. Mike?
Well, Ben said Christopher Steele. I think he must have meant Carter Page. The FISA warrant in question and addressed in the Nunes memo was the warrant to wiretap Carter Page.
Right.
Not Christopher Steele.
Steele was the author of that dossier, which also is mentioned in the report from the Republicans. But yes, it was Carter Page who was...
Yes, and the investigation of Page had started about 6 months earlier in the summer. The application was filed in October of 2016, but they had begun their investigation of Page in the summer because of his contacts with the Russians. As a number of Republican congressmen said on the Sunday programs yesterday, the Nunes memo doesn't really address the main subject of the investigation of these intelligence committees and the special prosecutor, which is the question of collusion between the Trump campaign and Russians on criminal activities. Now, I somewhat disagree with Ben on the question of whether it's a big thing or a small thing. I think it's insignificant. I've read that memo several times. I'm looking at it right now. I just reread it. I don't see that it's got much of a bearing at all on the overall investigation.
Should the Democratic counter be released?
Well, yes, of course. We should get all the information out at this point, subject only to removing any information that might reveal sources and methods of the investigating agencies. But there seems to have been very little of that in the Nunes memo, and I assume there'll be little of that in the Democratic memo as well. But I'm as concerned as Ben Baggert is about privacy and very worried about the FISA court in general. The requirement is that the FISA court is supposed to govern surveillance of foreigners and of Americans only insofar as they're in contact with foreigners. But that does leave a big door open for investigating matters that have nothing to do with foreigners if they're listening to the phone calls and reading the emails of Americans. But in this case, I don't see any fire there, and I'd like to hear Ben suggest what he thinks the fire may be. I just don't see that it's significant. It simply says that the main drift of the Nunes memo is that it failed to say, in mentioning the Steele dossier, it failed to say that some of Steele's work was paid for by the Democratic National Committee and the Hillary Clinton campaign. But that was only after he had been hired by Republican opponents of Trump in the...
All right, hold tight. 877-217-5757 for Mike Wolff and Ben Baggert. We start with Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Hi, Phil. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Good morning, gentlemen. You know, I went back over the weekend about the memo stuff that's been coming out, and I took a look at the Valerie Plame scandal, and my goodness, what concern that Vice President Cheney had for the national security of our country to go after Valerie Plame and her husband for telling the truth about all the lies that were going on about Iraq. I mean, my goodness, there's no nothing they will stoop to, no low thing to stoop to. I also say that Mitch McConnell's really the president of our country right now. I mean, basically, he's wielding the most power right now in Washington. If y'all could discuss that. Thanks.
Thank you, Phil. Ben, what are your thoughts?
My thoughts are that Phil is concerned about something that I'm sure is important to him, but it's irrelevant to our conversation right now. What's troubling to me is that so many important people in the FBI and in the Justice Department procured a search warrant without telling the whole truth. The important United States Supreme Court decision of Franks versus Delaware is one that we should have on our mind right now. In that case, the court, I think it was a 9-0 decision, decided something that we should all be in favor of. It's that when government officials seek to spy on an American citizen, they should tell everything. They should tell the good, the bad. They should have to prove that there is reason, that there's probable cause, a pretty good reason, to think that a crime has been committed and that evidence of that crime will be found if the warrant is issued. Now, the people who did that did not tell the whole truth. They did not tell the court that what they were relying on was a document created essentially, initially, and paid for by a political campaign to spy on a guy in another campaign. That is something that should concern every single one of us.
All right. And, I asked earlier of Mike Wolf, should the Democratic response be released by the Intelligence Committee? The response to the Democratic response to the memo that the Republicans released on Friday, should the Democrats' version of events be released to the public as well? Okay, I don't know. We've lost Ben for just a moment. So let's see what the issue is there. 877-217-5757. President Trump flashed anger at one of the leading antagonists in the Russia probe today, mocking Representative Adam Schiff's personal appearance and accusing him without evidence of illegally concealing or leaking confidential information. Here's a tweet from the president. Little Adam Schiff, writes President Trump, who is desperate to run for higher office, is one of the biggest liars and leakers in Washington, right up there with Comey, Warner, Brennan, and Clapper. Adam leaves closed committee hearings to illegally leak confidential information. Must be stopped. Schiff responds by saying, Mr. President, I see you've had a busy morning of executive time. Instead of tweeting false smears, the American people would appreciate it if you turned off the TV and helped solve the funding crisis, protected Dreamers, or really anything else. So there is now some intensity between the congressman from Burbank and the U.S. president. And here is Abe on Burbank in Baton Rouge. Abe, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Mike Wolf and Ben Baggert. Hi, Abe.
Good morning. I love your show. Listen, my question is that these are FBI senior officials. They're belt loop people. They're not the field agent. For them to hide behind the field agents and say this is an attack on the FBI, there was just so many instances where there was an appearance. I'm not saying it is, but, you know, one's wife is running and getting money from the DNC. The other attorneys were on this thing. There were so many places where the FBI should have known better. This is not the senior official that should be involved in this. And that gives me the belief that they also thought Hillary would win and this would go away. There was just too many instances where the wrong FBI senior officials were making decisions.
We've got to take a break, but we'll return. Thank you, Abe. Back after this pause. This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for joining us. 877-217-5757 is your number. Ali Baltazar is producing, and we're continuing our discussion with attorneys Michael Wolf and Ben Baggert about this memo that was released Friday from the Republicans on the House Intelligence Committee, who claim that federal law enforcement officials abused their power to spy on former Trump campaign official Carter Page. Now, Democrats have a 10-page memo that they want to release, but it needs approval of the Intelligence Committee. So far, that has not been provided. There will be a vote today, according to reports, and Republicans on the committee last week voted against releasing the Democratic memo. At the same time, they chose to initiate the release of their own 3.5-page document. What do you think? 877-217-5757. Michael Wolf, as we went to the break, Abe on Burbank made the statement that the FBI, which has 37,000 employees, at least at some levels, appears, in his view, to be tilted in its support of Hillary Clinton in last year's election, and perhaps the FBI was making decisions based on their support of Clinton and opposition to Trump. Is that fair, or is that misleading as far as that particular perception? Mike Wolf?
I don't really know. I don't think it comes to the main issue. FBI agents and Department of Justice employees vote like everybody else. One might assume half of them are Democrats, half Republicans, or rather a third and maybe a quarter of them are independents, or a third of them. And so they've got opinions, and they're all professional enough, or they're expected to be professional enough, to separate their personal preferences from their work. Now, the main question that raised by this Nunes memo, though, is whether the FBI agents lied to the FISA court. Did they present false information, either by omission or by presenting information that was wrong or leaving out information that was important? Now, and that's what Ben Baggert says was the important issue, and I think it is the most important thing. But the Nunes memo does not demonstrate anything about that. It simply tries to raise an inference that there was bias in the FBI, but it doesn't present the information that was given for the warrants. The Justice Department got four warrants to tap Carter Page's phone. We don't know yet what they found. We don't know whether they found evidence that he was working with Russians in an illegal or an improper way. So the matter cannot be closed or understood by just looking at this Nunes memo.
Tim, excuse me, we'll get to Tim in just a moment. Let's go first to Walton in Opelousas, who's been waiting patiently. Walton, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana with Mike Wolf and Ben Baggert.
Oh, thank you very much. I think I'm very much in agreement with Mr. Wolf, if I've understood what's the different factors that each might represent. However, I believe that the Nunes memo will make no sense. In fact, the whole memo thing will not make of any sense that will be helpful to the American people until the Democratic minority report is added to it. If it gets approved.
All right, Ben Baggert, when we lost you a few moments ago, I was asking about the minority report. Should that one be revealed to the American people?
Of course it should be revealed to the American people, provided it doesn't reveal any means or methods by the FBI, and I doubt that it will. But I agree with a lot of what Mike said, but I disagree with this one thing. The law requires that when you go to a judge in secret without the other side there and you are a top-level government official appointed by the president during a political campaign, or whether it is or isn't a political campaign, no matter what the search warrant is seeking, you have to tell the judge the good and also the bad. You have to say why this tends to prove that a crime was being committed. And you have to say, well, this is why, this is the evidence that we have that might mitigate against the proof that a crime was being committed.
Tom in Walker. Hi, Tom. You're on Talk Louisiana with Ben Baggert and Mike Wolf.
Yes. One statement about this whole kind of mess has been started here with this memo. No one knows what was put in that FISA warrant. And the memo doesn't state anything that was in this FISA warrant. So how could anybody sit here on a daily basis and make assumptions on what this is all about when no one knows what is in that FISA warrant? We don't know what was put in there about political parties or anything. So
All right. Thank you, Tom.
Let me answer that. We don't know what was in the warrant, but they do tell you what was in the application for the warrant. And the offense, as set forth in the memo, is what the FBI and the Justice Department officials put in the application and what they did not put in the application.
Mike, your thoughts?
No, Jim, I think Ben is mistaken about that. The memo gives a little information about what was presented in the application, but it doesn't present everything by a long shot. It doesn't give us the application. That's why the Democrats want to release their 10-page memo to give more information about what was presented. But I don't think Ben is accurate when he says we know what they told the FISA court.
James in New Iberia. James, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana. Hi, James.
Yeah, I mean, this is, yeah, hi. Are you able to hear me?
I am.
Okay, great. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous what they tried to do. The Democrats, got with officials, higher-up officials in the FBI to try to get dirt on their opponent, on the other side, on the other party. Now, this is something that we see in banana republics. You know, we see this in totalitarian governments.
All right. Your thoughts, Mike, about whether Democrats were engaging in a witch hunt here?
No. Well, I think he's mistaken. He said that the FBI was trying to get information on the other political party, assuming the FBI was the Democratic Party or something of that kind. This warrant application, FISA application, was presented in connection with an investigation of Carter Page that had begun several months before, in the summer of 2016.
All right. And Scott writes, the fact that former FBI Director Comey announced 5 days before the election that he was reopening the Clinton email investigation, I think it was a little more than 5 days, but nonetheless it was close to the election, proves, according to Scott, that the FBI wasn't helping her. That put the final nail in Hillary Clinton's coffin. Dan downtown. Dan, good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Yes. Can we draw something positive from all this? That no matter what kinds of attempts Nunes and his Trump operatives resort to, it will not deter Mueller's search for the truth, the facts, the evidence.
All right, Ben, should Mueller be shut down? Ben Baggers?
Is that directed?
Yes. Should Bob Mueller's investigation be closed?
No, I don't think that we have enough information to show that Bob Mueller's information, that his investigation should be closed.
What about Mr. Rosenstein, though? Should he be fired?
I don't think we have enough information to show that he should be fired, but I think he should be looked at very, very closely for having signed one of the last applications, but we don't know what was in that application.
All right, Mike, according to some, this is really inside baseball, and it's a little hard to follow. It's not one of those simple stories that often gains a life of its own. Whatever the intent, as far as getting a nationwide response to this memo, it appears to be a rather tepid response to this point.
Well, yes, and it should be. And to me, that's an interesting point, to see how the parties and the political players are spinning the investigation. Naturally, most of the Republicans are trying to spin things their way and the Democrats the other way. But I think we ought to just quit talking about it until Mueller releases his report. It's, for example, the other day the news media was going crazy for about a week saying Trump had considered firing Mueller but then decided against it. To me, that's non-news. That it really is close to what Trump calls fake news. Why are they talking about that even? I think everybody should shut up and forget about it until Mueller finishes his investigation.
Ben, you get the final few words in our last 30 seconds. Do you have a summation of this? Is where we're going with it?
Are you addressing that to me, Jim?
Yes, I am.
I think that the public should be very, very concerned that this type of thing occurred at the highest levels of the Obama administration. I think what occurred was certainly misleading to a FISA court that didn't have the other side of the story, and that should never happen in America.
Thank you, Ben Baggert. Thank you, Michael Wolff. And we'll be back tomorrow, same time, same place. Hope you have a great day. For Ali Baltazar, I'm Jim Inkster. Thank you for listening to Talk Louisiana, and stay tuned.
For a podcast of today's show, go to WRKF.org or find the Talk Louisiana podcast on the WRKF app. We welcome your feedback.